The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And it's good to have you back on the programme. On to it, we welcome Mary T. McBride. Good morning to you and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
No, it's good to have you with us. Now, there's an article in the papers today where I suppose former Minister Deputy Joe McHugh is drawing the line in the sand, which he will not cross over to rejoin the Fine Gael party, to take up the party whip. And I think one of the key demands he's seeking is penalty-free downsizing for defective concrete homeowners. I mean, that would be a significant step in the right direction, Mary T, in fairness.
Absolutely, Greg. I think it's really positive to see Deputy McHugh call out the need for penalty-free downsizing, because as we know, you know, vulnerable homeowners like pensioners, they'll not be able to raise any additional financing to cover any shortfall in fixing their home. So I think, you know, penalty-free downsizing is definitely needed for those wishing to do that. But I mean, it's a bit of a low-hanging fruit, and it's also only one of 80 amendments that were put forward by homeowners to try and make this scheme fixable. And I suppose my comment on be wary of false friends is, you know, what is Joe to say about the unjust square foot caps facing victims in Donegal, which defective apartment owners, including his own party leader, don't appear to have? What about the exclusion of businesses, farm buildings and others? What about the impact of the visual damage threshold on homeowners that were forced to plaster over cracks to try to keep some heat in their homes? And then crucially, what is he to say about the lack of information regarding progress in the review of IS465 and the fact that we've learned that Engineers Ireland have advertised a training for March 30th on the existing standard, which we know is fatally flawed? You know, I think it's very positive to see Joe McHugh come out about wonder whether this stance is more to do with Joe's desire to get back into the Fine Gael party fold rather than seeking a just and fair solution for families in crisis. I just can't understand his silence on so many other crucial issues.
That being said, just I think we invited Deputy McHugh on, did we? Yeah. Did we invite him? No, we didn't. Okay, well, we'll extend that invite to him to tease this out a little bit more with him. That being said, I suppose if every politician sort of set out red lines before they would be in government or be in a ruling party, let's put it like that, there, there'd be very few politicians about. He, at least some might say, you know, he stood with homeowners in terms of giving up the party whip, and he has picked quite an important change as maybe his pathway back into the party. He's not, I mean, you wouldn't expect him, let me put it to you like this, you wouldn't expect him really to set out 80 demands before he rejoined Fine Gael, would you?
No, I don't, but I do expect him to be a bit more transparent about, you know, what those red line issues are, because in his media statements, he has only been quite clear about the penalty-free downsizing, but he's, you know, dangling a sort of invisible carrot, if you would, in front of homeowners by saying there are other issues that he's also seeking to have addressed in amendments to, you know, the regulations or to the redress scheme. And what are those? I mean, I really think, you know, homeowners are in an absolute crisis, an unfolding humanitarian disaster here in Donegal, as we all know, and as you've widely covered, Greg. I think it's just the basic, you know, respect for the situation that they're in, yeah, Deputy McHugh would say what those are, you know?
It's kind of interesting too today. I note that the EU's looking to introduce zero emission new build houses by 2028, okay? And it's almost like sometimes you feel like you're living in an alternative reality. To what building standards do houses currently replacing defective concrete houses, to what standard do they have to be built? It's 2208, is it? 2008?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, so we have a multi-billion euro scheme, right, that the government is backing that is at least going to be, if not already, at odds with EU law. And that's what's acceptable to the people of Donegal and the other other counties, that we are talking, and the media is talking about, oh, right, these new regulations, zero emission houses by 2028, 5 years away. And we've barely scratched the surface of rebuilding these homes. And they're going to be built to outdated standards. It kind of, you know, I find it hard even to read or listen to the news because it's so bloody ridiculous. And a lot of these contradictions and exclusions and mistreatment of Donegal people and those in other counties are just routinely ignored. It's as if it doesn't matter. It's crazy. Like, it's unreal. If you explain this to aliens, they'd get back in their mothership and sod off back to wherever they came from.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's another one of the issues that I would have thought, you know, would have been an easy one for Deputy McHugh to you know, come out publicly and say that he would be pushing for also. But he hasn't, you know, and I really would urge him to maybe rethink, you know, when he's next on your show or in other media statements, to kind of be a bit clearer with homeowners about what his red line issues are beyond penalty-free downsizing. And I presume as well that he, you know, was in support, as all of us were, with the 2.5 billion euro 100% redress for defective apartment owners, which seemingly has no caps involved in that. To, you know, again, the point that you just made, they're not restricted to, you know, pre-2008 building standards. Just the inequity is just astounding. You know?
And unfortunately, the way news cycles works, it was a big deal for a little while and it's on to the next thing. Yet there are people that are not sleeping at night or have to live the rest of their lives with this dark cloud, this inequality hanging over them. And yet it was 3 or 4 days in the newspapers, which is actually not bad for an issue, and then it's gone. But the reality is left. We are left with the reality. Thousands of people. And I'll tell you, when it becomes cheaper to access this scheme, if that ever happens, I think we're going to see a tsunami of houses, additional houses in Donegal and elsewhere that are going to be found to have defective concrete.
Absolutely, yeah. And I just think that, you know, like Joe McHugh, as a, you know, government party TD, his voice does have, you know, more weight, particularly with, you know, national media. And when he speaks out, maybe, you know, more so than our opposition TDs who have been tirelessly, you know, campaigning and trying to raise all these issues.
In fairness to the opposition, and I can't wait, those chickens are going to come home to roost soon and words are going to have to be backed up soon.
We'll have to see the colour of their money, you know, if indeed they do lead, you know, the next government. But I mean, I'm just dealing with the reality of where we are today.
I get you. I'm not pulling you up on clarity. Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, I've logged so much on this. I've logged so many commitments to so many different things, big item things, this defective box scandal, the state of the hospital, you know, stuff that's, I've asked questions directly as, will this be resolved? The answer being in the affirmative. And I just, I await to ask those questions in a different political environment with the hope that obviously for people, things improve. That's what we want. I'm not looking for any gotchas or anything to try and catch people out. Sure. And Mary T, we were former minister. I keep going to call him minister. Joe McHugh said at an event today, we didn't invite him before this call, right? In fairness to him. And he said he'll come on with us. And I'll tease out some of the stuff that you've been talking about, Mary T, and see what other, because he does say the wording's quite, he said he would consider rejoining the party on that particular issue, the low-hanging fruit, as you described it. We'll see what else it would be required for him to re-enter. Okay, is that all right, Mary T? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Listen, stay strong. Thanks, Mary T, for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. 086 6025000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. And it's been a really busy week on the phone lines. I can't overemphasize how important that is to us. Now, just a statement here from Letterkenny University Hospital, by the way. They are extremely busy today with long wait times at the ED. The emergency department at the hospital is under significant pressure with high attendance and long waiting times. A record number of 194 patients attended the emergency department in the last 24 hours. That's huge. 194 people. The high number of people attending who need to be admitted for ongoing treatment means that there is pressure on beds availability. This is resulting in significant delays being experienced by patients in the ED who are waiting for a bed to become available on the ward. So that means we're going to see very high trolley watch figures tomorrow, okay? The hospital is also treating 10 patients with COVID-19, 4 patients with influenza A. They say that all beds available in the hospital at the moment are in use. Every effort, they say, is being made to discharge patients who are ready to go home, so the beds will become available for patients who need to be admitted at the earliest opportunity. The hospital says it acknowledges that these delays are very difficult for patients and their families and apologise for the inconvenience and distress these delays cause. It says the hospital is committed to treating everyone who presents at the ED. People who are seriously injured or ill are assessed and treated as a priority, and those who do not require urgent care may be waiting longer. And they re-emphasise that people should only attend the emergency department at the hospital if it is an emergency situation. They ask people to attend their GP or an antiviral service in the first instance, if at all possible, is the phraseology they use. The hospital, very busy, all beds currently occupied. They're trying to discharge those who can be discharged. That in and of itself, and we covered it extensively on this show, is a challenge. Getting home care packages, beds in the community, family who are able to look after someone who doesn't require acute care any longer but requires ongoing care. And the delays and the problems and the shortage there then has a knock-on effect, and people can't get into the hospital because sometimes there's a struggle to get people out. Okay, now, it just so happens there are these types of stories going around at the moment, let me put it like that. But we read that the head of a childcare representative group has said one of the world's largest nursery school groups, which instructed parents to stop telling their daughters they look pretty or claiming calling them princess or a tomboy, was overstepping a boundary. The woke handbook sent to parents whose children attend Bright Horizons nurseries in the US and the UK also cautions mums and dads against praising good behaviour and takes pains to define girls as children who identify as female. Chair of Ireland's Federation of Early Childhood Providers, what say you? What's your feelings on where we're going, the direction here?
Well, I suppose for me in my service, everything is parental driven. And if we were to having parents coming to us asking us not to use the term princess or superhero or whatever, then what we would do is we would survey all of the parents and we would take guidance from them. So I was quite shocked when I heard what was in the handbook. It certainly wouldn't be in my handbook, in my service in any way. Terms of endearment are always used to empower the children, and it's all the children within your service. It's not just the girls. We would empower all children in the same light.
It seems to be, though, what they're against is affirming gender stereotypes, you know, that maybe girls play with these toys, boy plays with them, girls wear skirts, boys wear trousers, you know. But I mean, where's the evidence for this? Just you work with children. Does that cause harm if you speak and treat children like that?
Can I come in? Yeah, look, one thing I will say to you here, when children come into a service, the girls play with the cars, the boys play with the dolls, they wash the dolls. No, everybody does the same thing. It's totally child-led. So if a child wants to go and take a doll in a buggy and push it around the room or wash the doll down or whatever, that's up to each individual child. They're not treated any differently because of their gender. They're all treated exactly equally. Do you know what I mean? So that's empowering a child.
Yeah. So, but would you avoid using words like princess or gender specific words like girls or boys?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. That being said, we can't ignore this either, because this isn't necessary.
Like in the morning time when we open the door, that's come on in, princess, and.
Yeah, my apologies, Elaine. We won't keep you very much longer. The line is just very up and down. But the point I was trying to make here, this isn't just some person, one individual that's tweeted something that's open for discussion. This is quite a significant organisation that's distributing this handbook. Do you think there'll be a pushback from parents? Do you talk to parents much about these types of issues? And what do you think they might say?
I actually did speak to 25 of my parents over, absolutely shocked. A child needs to be a child, and if a parent wants to make a decision to change how we address their child, well, then they will come to us individually and then we will do them case by case. You know, you look into the future, who knows what the future is going to hold here, you know, what is going to go on in the next couple of years, because you see a lot of changes, as you said, about gender. So we don't know what's going to happen in the near future.
All right. Listen, thanks for working through us that with us on that poll connection. Sorry. We appreciate your time. No, it's okay. It's perfectly fine. Elaine Dunn there, Chair of Ireland's Federation of Early Childhood Providers. Now, as I say, this is these issues on a hobby horse for us here, by the way. I just want to make that clear. It just so happens that there are two quite high-profile stories going around at the moment, both which deal with children and conversations around gender. So just to give you a recap there, the head of a childcare representative group has said one of the world's largest nursery school groups, which instructed parents to stop telling their daughters they look pretty or calling them princesses or a tomboy, was overstepping boundary. The woke handbook sent to parents whose children attend Bright Horizons nurseries in the US and the UK also cautions mums and dads against praising good behaviour and takes plans to define girls as children who identify as female. You just heard from Elaine Dunn there. She has her concerns. But what say you? 08660 25000. And also, I do want to hear from people who might believe that this is the right way to go. I just think it's... There's more and more that sort of it's notional amongst adults and it's being imposed on children. It's just, I don't know, it feels a bit worrying. Good morning, Greg. So the guards have no problem seizing learner driver cars from Donegal, yet Ukrainians can go where they want, as she said, if they find out they are a permanent resident. The next time they're caught, they'll be dealt with. If you know they're a resident, then they know the address. It's how long they intend to stay here. The situation is somewhat complicated. The majority will go home when it's safe for them to do so. I don't know what the definition of a permanent resident is, but I am a permanent resident. A Ukrainian staying in a hotel in one of our towns and villages, I don't think they'd be classed as permanent. They don't have a permanent address and what have you. Just listening there, all about the money, Greg. Get money in, not learner drivers or anything else, believes that caller. Let me see, keep going here. Congratulations to George on his album tour from his old piano teacher. Yes, yeah, impressive, George. He really is. I just want to mention one other thing as well. Stramore National School, do you remember we had the students in with their robot that fired little discs out? They had won the national competition. They're doing a fundraising to go over and compete at the World Vex Robotics Championship in Dallas. It's the biggest robotics event in the world, and why shouldn't we have a group from Stramore National School over at it? Well, there's a big breakfast for Stramore National School. It's on Sunday, March 26th, so that's a week Sunday. It runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's in Wilkins Bar in Churchill. All donations greatly appreciated. So if you want to back them, you can do that. Right, we were talking yesterday on the show about littering. How in God's name are we going to stop it? Maybe Joe can help us. Joe, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the time to speak to us today. How are you keeping?
Very well, thank you.
Right, okay. You were talking to us about people throwing rubbish out the windows. What particularly do you want to talk about?
Right, well, I just heard the lady talking about it yesterday and just want to make a comment on it. Now, I'll give you an example. Anybody throws a bottle over a hedge, if I'm going down a moor, I know the bottle breaking is kind of a thud noise. If the flames pick it up, it's in the silage, and then the harvester lifts it and goes onto the silage pad. Now, if you have a cow who has perforated stomach or not doing well, you realise that the cows are eating these bits of grass. And people are throwing, but they don't realise the pain and the suffering the animals have, the sheep and cows both.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you make, because we often view this as environmental, or how pretty the countryside might look or our towns and villages might look. But this is a problem for farmers as well, because as you say, you bring the mower over it, you hear that crack, it's in bits, and it could end up... do we know, does it happen? I'm sure it does, though. But does it happen where animals that are fed this product end up getting injured because of the plastic contained within?
Well, you know, I kind of phrase it, it's sort of a silent killer. So if you don't really know what's doing to your inside, but I had a cow years ago with a perforated stomach. And actually, what done that? Another example of it, a tin can. Now, if you look at the trough or the feeding passage where the silage is and they have it cleaned up, you'll get bits of can bigger than the cow would eat, but it's a part of the can. So that's a big bit. Where did the wee bits go? It had to go into them and through them. You know, they don't realise the damage it's doing to the environment and the animals especially.
It's really quite an interesting point that I hadn't really thought of or heard before, Joe. And it makes perfect sense, because this stuff has to end up somewhere. There's no way to filter these shards of plastic or metal. And the idea then that a cow or a sheep could be eating them and digest them, and any grazing animal, presumably a horse or whatever it might be, the same could apply, Joe.
Same does apply, especially when they're grazing plastic. Now, a wee plastic bag or whatever, for the cow and sheep's nosy, and they'll pick that up and start to chew it. And a few times I've pulled plastic out of the cow's mouth. You know, it's a job of catching them. I'm afraid to do that.
So anyway. You're running around looking to try and give an oral examination to a cow that's not interested in having a look at you, Joe. But listen, okay, I see exactly where you're coming from. Never crossed my mind before, but I will remember this conversation, Joe. Another good reason as to why we don't or shouldn't be chucking our rubbish away illegally.
You're quite correct.
All right, Joe, good man. Yeah. How is it farming at the moment? Is it tough?
It's not so bad. It's not a great day to be out, but yeah, good to be out.
Good, exactly. And good to have the health to do it, Joe. Come here, keep at it. Take care of yourself, Joe. Lovely to chat to you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. All right, that's Joe there. He's out and about. And now, looking out the window here at the mountaintop in Letterkenny. And the weather is beautiful. I would say it's chilly, but it's beautiful. Okay, morning. This is the second year I've contacted the Chamber, the Letterkenny Chamber, I presume this is, about having a quiet part of the parade for children with autism and other issues. Last year, they told me it was too late to organise, but thought it was a good idea. I contacted them in January and they assured me they would discuss it. Disappointed to hear the ads for the parade and no mention of it. It doesn't affect me or my family, thankfully, but I'm sure plenty of families don't go to the parade for this reason. It works in other towns. Sligo has been doing it for a few years now. So presumably, in part of my ignorance, is this a case whereby there's a section of the street, maybe the lower main street or wherever it might be in a town, and everything goes silent, the music goes silent, the bands go silent? Is this the norm elsewhere, as this listener rightly says? They say it is, so I've no reason to doubt that. And is there a big appetite for it in our towns around this region? Let me know, 086 60 25,000. So it would be a section of the parade where things fall silent. I presume that's the suggestion they're making, so that parents and guardians of children with autism and other issues can attend. Would there be, is there a huge appetite for that out there? Let me know. 086 60 24,000. 24,000? We've lost 1,000. 086 60 25,000. The last few weeks, there have been a lot of long wheelbase vans parked along Letterkenny Main Street and at the bottom of Church Lane on double yellows, making it impossible for a fire brigade or ambulance to get past on the road down the side of some businesses there, blocking emergency vehicles too. There's no problem until something needing an emergency response happens. That's a concerned listener there. Hi, Greg. Being as our sister Kathleen's a dedicated listener of your programme, please wish her a very happy birthday from her fanned brother and sisters, her fanned brothers and sisters, Garmiha Mahagut. Kathleen, a dedicated listener, thank you very much indeed. A very happy birthday to you from your brothers and sisters, but also from us all here at Highland Radio. We hope you have a lovely day and you're very well treated. Now, I read the article on the front of the Irish Daily Mail this morning. More than 1,200 people under the age of 65 are living in nursing homes and can't leave, with advocacy groups saying they are being held in custody due to the housing crisis. Anne Griffin is regional advocate with Sage Advocacy for the Northwest. And it's shocking language, it's emotive language, and I would imagine that's by accident rather than design, so people sit up and take note of what's being said, Anne.
Yes, I suppose 1,200 people nationally living in nursing home care, and nursing homes really should be the last resort. But sometimes it's the only option for a person, and then they have no choice as to where they live. They lose all access to family life. They're living with older people, not in a suitable environment in terms of activities and engagements. And the diseases like motor neuron, Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis, these are lifelong illnesses, and the planning should take place much earlier in terms of accommodation and facilities to support those individuals in a community setting in an ordinary neighbourhood. Nursing home care is excellent in terms of the physical well-being, but for a person, a younger person under the age of 65, they need more interventions. They need physio. They need engagements to stimulate. They need access to family. And this is denied in terms of the nursing home care, because the nursing home environment is set up to support an older person.
Yeah.
A younger person requires ongoing assessment in terms of what they require to be supported to live an independent life. Mm. And we need funding to match the care needs of the individual. But I suppose the requirement comes in terms of suitable access to suitable accommodation in community settings. And then we only have the National Rehab Unit in Dunleary. So if a person under the age of 65, it may be following a farm accident or a road traffic accident or acquired brain injury. Of course, we also have the early onset dementia from the Korsakoff syndrome. And those, that individual, if they require support from the National Rehab, they then they're invariably discharged back into nursing home care. And carers in nursing homes are trained to care for older people. But the care needs of a younger person are quite different, and they need to be stimulated.
For sure. And this is about their personal development as well, and what is lost in that. And this is, and you quite rightly point out, this is not a criticism of nursing homes. They provide a wonderful service for a certain group of people, but that service is not tailored for this other group of people, groups of people that we're talking of. And this is not a 2023 problem or a 2022 problem. I've been speaking to, and particularly when you mentioned people who have suffered a brain injury, I've been speaking to advocates on this issue and this problem for years and years and years. So there are people that are living and have been living very long term in a nursing home when they'd be far better off in the types of environments you've described.
Absolutely. And it really is about forward thinking and planning. And planning should be in place at a much earlier stage where you have the ongoing life illnesses. But then once you have an acquired injury, that then can prevent an individual returning home to their own area, neighbourhood. It can prevent a person moving back to their own home. That then has an impact on family life and particularly on children, and where that parent is missing out on parenting their child. Mm. So the planning needs to come in at a much earlier stage, and we need to consider more than the physical well-being of the individual.
And this there is this, and what we elements. Are what we yeah. are doing here is we're choosing the path of least resistance here. It's handy. You know what I mean? It is a space for someone that, but it's not the right thing to do. This is not focused on the person. It's not person focused. It's not what can we do for Greg in his situation. It's what we'll do rightly for Greg. You know what I mean? Without consideration for, you know, my development, my life, my rehabilitation as well, because some of what we're talking about, you know, there are, you know, rehabilitation options, you know, and what have you, to give people the best level of independence or whatever it might be. That's obviously not happening how it should in a nursing home environment, I presume.
Absolutely. And there will be people listening to us this morning, Greg, who may be in those circumstances. But the ability to self-determine and the fact that your independence is taken away, because you technically have to accept what is on offer. And that then impacts on your social inclusion, it impacts on the family life, it impacts on relationships, and everything is, I suppose, in terms of support, we need to consider what happens if you leave the rehab unit, where do you go next, what are the supports in the community, like physio and ongoing therapies that are required to support those individuals. And then we want to talk about the quality of life, talk about engagement with their peers, relationships, social inclusion. All of that is lost in many ways because of the lack of choice.
Yeah, and it puts me in mind of a case we covered on this programme some time ago of a person who effectively ended up being a long-term resident of the acute hospital because there was nowhere for them to go. And I believe they were moved then out of the hospital to a nursing home. It would make you wonder, you know, is that person still there? Is that the right thing for them? I'm not talking about any individual cases, but this is probably happening really quite regularly. And we know the number at the moment is 1,200, which is not a mountain we shouldn't be able to climb in providing proper services for these people in the right places. If there is a will, Anne, it shouldn't be beyond us.
No, it should not be beyond us. And, you know, you can see where in care settings where they have recently decongregated, and some of those residents are now living independently in communities for the first time. So it can be done, but there is a requirement for funding to support the care needs and the ongoing assessment of these individuals, because they're missing out in terms of where they're at in terms of their own development. They're missing out on education. Mm. They're missing out on an opportunity to live a normal life. They're missing out on an opportunity to have a job, to be independent. And you can talk about independence in terms of support for their disability, but you're also talking about travel, how they get from A to B. Then you're talking about access to accommodation in the community. What type of accommodation is built to support the individual's care needs? And you cannot say that any one service fits the bill for everybody. Every person should have the right to be assessed in relation to their care needs and to be supported to live as an individual and an independent life as much as you can possibly be.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anyone listening to this program that would like to think their fellow people or some of them feel like they're being held in custody because the proper facilities aren't available for them. So we just need really, I suppose, the powers that be to exercise the will of the people. That would be the right thing to do.
Well, we certainly need more support for those individuals who find themselves in those circumstances, because we find that for the older people in nursing home care, we have the manager for the services for older people in the various CHO areas. And then you have, I suppose, if you look at the national picture, the funding is not matched county to county, but we are saying that the funding needs to match the individual's care needs. We need to, accommodation needs to match their care needs.
Yes, of course.
And whilst nursing homes provide excellent services for older people, the staff there are not trained to provide a service to a person with an acquired brain injury, say, for example.
Okay, yeah.
And then you find that there is a lot of frustration. And of course, the other side is that it may not be fair on the older person to have individuals under the age of 65 living in their nursing home because of their care needs do not match the care needs of the older person.
Yeah.
And you could be talking about, you know, music or noise or activities, all of those things that are set up for the older person. They technically don't meet the needs of a younger person.
Yeah, for sure. And listen, thank you so much for explaining that so clearly to us. We really do appreciate your time this morning. Anne Griffin, Regional Advocate with Sage Advocacy for the Northwest. Okay, we're heading towards the end of the programme. Let me tell you that our show sponsors, of course, are St Mary's GEA Convoy and their development draw. They are raising funds for the ongoing development of their facilities. There's 50k to win on St Patrick's Day, 50k for St Patrick's Day. It's their draw. And you can get tickets by going to St Mary's GEA Convoy Development Draw, their social media website, etc. We asked you today to be in with a chance of winning two tickets into that draw. The question was, in the famous All-Ireland song in 2012, Jimmy's winning what? Is it Jimmy's winning matches or is it Jimmy's winning footballs? We insulted you with that in question, but the answer was, of course, matches. And the winner of two tickets into that draw, and fingers crossed you are successful. I had the winner, and now I've lost the winner. I have it again. Quite correctly, Kathleen Gallagher from Letterkenny correctly answered matches and wins two tickets. I hope you win the 50K for St. Patrick's Day. And we'll have another two tickets to give away tomorrow. In the meantime, if you want to support that club and be in with a chance of winning, as I say, search out their social media and elsewhere for your chance to buy those tickets. All right, that is where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you to all of you who listened to the programme, took part in the programme, watched it, however you engaged with us, it's really appreciated. We're back with you tomorrow morning, Wednesday. We'll announce the winner of our Irish Music Month Search for a Local Musical Talent Hero competition. We've got businesses with Kieran and so much more besides. So rejoin us at 9, but don't go anywhere today because John Breslin's coming up after the news around the Northwest.